Welcome, everyone, to episode 421 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to break down the play-in tournament races. We have less than a month left before the playoffs begin, and these things are really heating up in both conferences. So we'll give our takes on which teams we think are going to emerge from both tournaments and whether they actually pose a threat to pull off an upset in the first round of the playoffs. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a guy who I know is excited to talk about the Bulls and their place in this play-in tournament mess. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
I think we have some hot takes coming in regards to the Bulls, which I'm really looking forward to because I think you're on the same page as I am. I have a feeling ultimately you and I are going to, well, piss off Bulls Nation, to be honest with you. So very much looking forward to that.
And here you criticize me for trying to make enemies with Celtics fans all the time. Come on now.
Oh, well, this is different. I used to be one of them, so it's okay. It's like a former family member coming in and saying, hey, you know what? Just a reminder, this family sucks. It's okay.
Yeah. All right. So we'll start with the East, Mort. And despite the Sixers' no good, very bad, horrible week, they, the Nets, the Bucks, are all safely ahead of the field, so I think we can pencil those three in as the top three seeds in some order.
Yeah.
The New York Knicks are still fourth place in the East. We're recording this on Sunday. They currently have a half-game lead over the Atlanta Hawks, and Trae Young is out with this grade 2 ankle injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out, but I'm assuming he's missing at least another week or two. So it sounds almost sacrilegious, but of all the teams left, the Knicks might have the best shot of avoiding this play-in and being a top six seed. Otherwise, we have Atlanta at 5, Boston is a game behind at 6. Then we have the Heat, who are a half game behind Boston at 7. Then Hornets, Pacers, Wizards right now as the 8, 9, and 10. And the Bulls and Raptors are each a game and a half behind the Wizards. And Cavs, Magic, Pistons, thanks for coming, but enjoy the lottery.
Right.
So,
by the way, can you and I agree, since the Knicks and the Hawks are like lobbying for position, that Dan and Adam right now are having fierce DM chats?
Absolutely, yes. So, Mort, do you think any of these teams, that 4-5-6 mix, like, do you think Knicks, Hawks, Celtics are far enough ahead that they can be safely penciled in, or do you think there's still a risk that those teams slip down and one of, you know, Miami or Charlotte or something goes on a run here and ends up pushing one of them into the play-in tournament?
Well, statistically speaking, I don't think the Knicks are you know, a lock because they can still lose games. But from a perspective of how they're playing, a perspective of how they're performing, generally speaking, I think I consider them a lock too. I think this is one of those situations where we can take the mathematical approach and like what are the odds and whatnot, but you also just have to look at the strides of which teams are making and their roster and health and all those things. And right now the Knicks are just clicking. Is it 9 in a row
for them
at this point? Yeah. Right. And I don't think, even if that winning streak is going to be broken up at some point, I don't think that means that they're going to go on a losing streak necessarily. They have found another gear, and I suspect fully, and I expect them to maintain that level in some capacity moving on for the rest of the season. So I have them firmly ahead. I don't think they're in a risk of making the play-in tournament whatsoever. I would be very, very surprised. The Hawks, because as you said, Trey is out, might be out for a while. Mm-hmm. They could find themselves there. The Celtics they're interesting because they have just played such a weird season. It's just been so funky all over that I don't want to sit here and go, well, they're too talented, because in theory they are, But over the course of this season, they haven't really performed up to par, in my opinion, compared to how talented they are. So I can't rule out the fact that they're going to find themselves in the play-in tournament. Mm-hmm. As with Miami, it's sort of the same story. I just did a video on them on my YouTube channel, and basically they've just missed a ton of games to injuries. At the same time, offensively, they're not as potent as you want them to be. They're still down a few shooters just in terms of what's necessary, so that also means that that could swing a few games. Overall, I think it's the foursome of Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee, and New York I feel most certain about, and then everything down from there, that's like debatable.
Imagine you telling yourself coming into this season that those words would have left your mouth, that the Knicks would have been one of the four teams you felt, not the Heat, not the Celtics, not the Raptors, not the Pacers, the New York Knickerbockers.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But you know what? Good for Knicks fans. I mean, yeah. And good for this, for the city of New York, to finally have a Knicks team, they can root for. I mean, let me just go to their franchise index page on Basketball Reference. So they did make the playoffs 3 years in a row from 2011 to 2013. They didn't really get a whole lot far. They were, two of them were like first round exits, and then they made the second round once. So
That was the Pacers series where Roy Hibbert ended Carmelo's life.
Yeah, exactly. So that was like modest, I would say, success. Mm-hmm. And then you go back to 2003, 2004, another first round exit. 2000 to 2001, first round exit. This has been a very troublesome 20 years for the Knicks overall. A lot of playoff drought, a lot of scandals and humiliations. This just feels different. I could be wrong, Brian, but I don't remember having read, you know, a major article coming out of The Athletic or ESPN detailing drama behind the scenes this year by the Knicks.
There was the one from our friend of the podcast, Jerome Weitzman, where there was just like some behind the scenes tension with Tibbs, and he called some other executive hinky because he didn't like his analytic approach. But nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing too egregious. And yeah, I mean, look, the Knicks, I think the only thing that gives me pause about saying they are a lock to be a top six seed is their remaining schedule. They have Phoenix on Monday, then home against Chicago Wednesday, and then 3 days off, and then at Houston on Sunday, then at Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back, at Denver, at Phoenix, at Clippers, at Lakers, close things out, Spurs, Charlotte, Boston at home. Charlotte and Boston are back-to-back as well. So there are some winnable games in there, Chicago and Houston especially. You know, I think given how well the Knicks are playing, I would expect them to win both of those games. And that isn't to say that they can't beat some of these good teams as well. I mean, they definitely can. It's just, you know, that is a daunting stretch compared to what some of their other compatriots in this play-in tournament mix are facing. So, you know, if they had more of a lead over the field, I would feel better. But knowing that they're only two games up on the Heat, who are the seventh seed, so, you know, they lose a little bit of ground and they're right back into this potential play-in mix. You know, I think they are, you know, the odds are probably in their favor to avoid it, but I'm not 100% certain they're going to.
I don't know. I feel a little bit different. I look at them as one of those really strong teams that just wins games off of defense now. So I wouldn't be shocked if they also won against Memphis. They beat them earlier this month as well. Denver, I mean, they keep winning. But at the same time, they're still down both Jamal Murray and now Will Barton as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a lock loss necessarily. I think that could be a very competitive game. The Lakers is also one of those. I know, you know, at that point, LeBron and AD are both back. Right now, I think it's only AD, right? LeBron hasn't made his return.
Yeah, not yet.
So, look. I just don't think necessarily those two guys are fully up to speed. It would also be one of the last games of the regular season for those guys, so maybe they get like a minutes restriction going on. The Spurs, I think, are winnable. Hornets, definitely winnable. The Celtics, that we talked about, also winnable. I get what you're saying, but I don't think it's that bad. I think there are a lot of games here that could go their way. Obviously, they need to be played before we know for sure, but I'm fairly optimistic about them, which is just, yes, weird to say.
And look, the thing that's working in their favor, too, is that the teams below them have just been so frustratingly inconsistent all year. Like, Boston has a pretty easy schedule to close out the season. I mean, their two toughest games left are probably home games against Miami, but otherwise you have OKC, you have at Orlando, at Chicago, and then close out at Cleveland, at Minnesota, at Knicks. I mean, I guess that last Knicks game might determine which of these teams is in the play-in and which isn't. But, you know, but I mean, Boston right now, we're recording this on early Sunday afternoon, they are down 18 points to the Charlotte Hornets, who are without Gordon Hayward and LaMelo Ball and Kemba Walker.
And Kemba just left the court for the locker room after an apparent injury. So,
I don't feel good about the Celtics' chances of jumping up ahead of the Knicks. And then, as you said, you know, the Trae Young injury, they're playing Milwaukee tonight. They have Detroit tomorrow on the second night of back-to-back, two at Philly later this week. The schedule gets easier from there, but they still have Phoenix and then at Indiana. They have two against Washington, who are also playing really well. So those teams, I think, you know, by virtue of the teams below them maybe not being able to make up ground, that may be the best thing working for the Knicks. Even if they go 500 over this, you know, remaining stretch, it might be good enough to keep them out.
Right.
So let's turn our attention to the field that's currently in the mix, Mort. Miami, Charlotte, Indiana, Washington. We've been trying to figure out Miami all year, right? Like, the talent is there. We know what they did last season, but they just can't string together consistency, you know, like reel off a 9-game win streak like what the Knicks are doing. Like, they, you know, they win 4 and then they lose 3. It's just like you can't quite figure this team out. They've got a relatively easy end of season schedule, except that the next week, 2 weeks are pretty easy. And then you've got two against Boston, home against Philly, at Milwaukee to close things out. So that's a bit of a rough patch right there. But, you know, who's to say at that point, Philly and Milwaukee might be locked in the seeding, so they could be resting teams. But if the standings hold, more it's Miami, Charlotte, Indiana, Washington, Miami, Charlotte in the 7-8, who do you think wins that game?
Oh, that's a good question. So here's my concern about the Heat, right? They just don't shoot the 3-ball well enough at this point. They're also one of the worst rebounding teams in the entire league. I don't think those two stats are going to help them a whole lot going into the final stretch of the season, regardless of who they have coming up. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, they're going to meet the Bulls tomorrow night. That should be a double. Even so. No, but even so, I mean, when you look at this team, right, you know that they have just a ton of defensive capable players, and that's obviously great. But how many of these guys do you really trust to be one of those knockdown scorers? Like, even Jimmy, who I love, he's not a natural scorer, you know, like a prime Carmelo Anthony, anything of that sort. Like, he can get you 20-plus points. He can probably even give you 30 on a good day. But he's not someone you can ride for long stretches because he is still just a 22% three-point shooter. Bam is a much improved scorer, but he is still not one of those guys who goes out and gives you like 25 shot attempts any given night. Duncan Robinson is shooting a little bit worse than he did last year. Tyler Hero has been somewhat inefficient from the field, to be perfectly frank, like under 50% effective field goal percentage this year. Kendrick Nunn goes hot and cold. We know that. Victor Oladipo, we also know his offense this year has been weird, inefficient, poor, whatever you want to call it. Trevor Ariza is hitting under 40% from the field after becoming a Heat. Like, how much faith do you have in this offense in terms of, like, them coming out victorious of this endeavor?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it sounds like LaMelo could be back as soon as this week. Hopefully Hayward is back in time for the play-in as well. And I mean, that's going to be the thing that makes this thing really interesting. It's just a one game. No, that we get like the March Madness feel to it, where if you told me Miami and Charlotte in a 7-game series, I might choose Miami for the talent to win out. But a one game, you know, it's like, does LaMelo Ball get hot from three? Does Terry Rozier blow up for 30 points? Devontae Graham, Miles Bridges, who has been fantastic lately. Like, does he keep that momentum going? So, I mean, it's tough to say. Like, I still think I would pick the talent of Miami, but I wouldn't be super confident about it.
That's kind of my thinking as well. That's where I am. I just don't feel comfortable when I watch them play. I don't think that this is a team that can control their own destiny. Mm-hmm. I think if they meet someone who just gets hot on any given night, despite how good their defense is, they just cannot match them from an offensive perspective, and that is worrisome to me. But I agree with you. If it was a 7-game series, I would go with them over Charlotte. But in a 1-gamer, those gloves come off. It could go either way. I don't even feel comfortable choosing.
Yeah, and I think another problem is, you know, what Jimmy was talking about with Bam recently, where he's like, you know, great, you can hit jump shots, that's fine, but I want more bully ball. You know, that's probably the Hornets, the place to exploit them the most. They just don't have strong front court play or a strong center. So, you know, if Bam Adebayo decides to go into that bully ball mode, then, you know, I think you can feel a little bit better about the Heat. But yeah, if it turns into a shooting contest, no way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, too. They might throw out Bismack Biyombo, who, to his credit, though, is still a good defender who has great size. Mm-hmm. But that would be one of those situations where Bam just needs to abuse his matchup. Like, that's where he has to prove himself and almost establish that all-star presence that he has. Right. Because, like, if Bismack Biyombo and Cody Seller lock you down, then you need to work on something in the offseason.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I agree with you. But, see, this is really the thing about shooting, right? It can just flip a game so quickly. And looking at Charlotte, assuming, of course, LaMelo Ball is back at that point in time, Terry Rozier at 40% three-point shooter, making 3.3 of those bad boys every single night. Gordon Hayward, well, what is his status right now? Is he almost back?
He's injured in early April. He's going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. So
That's about now.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. I don't know if he's going to be back by the play-in.
Right.
Hopefully.
Okay. If he is, that's another guy. Like 41.5% shooter from downtown. Devontae Graham has been, he's been inefficient this year. I think that's fair to say. That said, he still is knocking down 3 triples per game at almost 37%. You got PJ Washington near 40%. LaMelo on almost 38%. Miles Bridges plus 40%. Malik Monk, 2 triples at night at 42%. You know what? That amount of shooting, that can just, in any given night, wipe Miami off the floor.
Yeah. Right, it's just a variance thing, right? And if you've got a number of guys who can go off on any given night, then, you know, the odds are that one of them probably will. So does Miami have the offensive firepower to keep up? Or is Miami's defense stifling enough to limit the damage that all of these Charlotte shooters do from deep? I don't know the answer.
I don't either. What I do know, though, is that we need to talk a little bit about Terry Rozier, because, you know, we laughed at that contract. We had bets going.
Which above 40%. Resoundingly won, by the way.
You did. I mean, have you looked at his Charlotte Hornets tenure so far over the past 2 seasons?
I know.
19 points per game, 4-plus rebounds, 4-plus assists, 40.3% from downtown on 7.4 attempts per night. Jesus. Yeah.
Him and Randall, we thought those were two, like, just egregiously bad contracts handed out that offseason, and both have just made that look very stupid in retrospect. Yeah.
And that's great. I love to be wrong about these things.
Yeah.
It just goes to show that there is improvement by going elsewhere. Sometimes a change of scenery is just that much more important. Mm-hmm. By the way, in two seasons, one that isn't even complete, Terry Rozier has hit more threes for the Hornets than he did during 4 years in Boston.
That's fantastic. Well, he barely played that first year.
That's still highly.
I mean, look, he didn't shoot above 40 from the field in those first 4 years in Boston. That was the joke. Will he even? Mm-hmm. That was our bet. Will he even crack 40% from the field? And now he's shooting above 40 from three over each of the last 2 years. So, kudos to Terry for. Yeah, he's been fantastic.
Yeah, former Celtics likes to go to Charlotte and just play better.
The Charlotte Hornets are, or the Boston Celtics are just a feeder system for the Charlotte Hornets.
I love right. that one for you. Okay,
fair enough. So, again, if it's Miami, Charlotte, one of those teams, you know, will win and be the 7th seed, then whichever team loses, right now the 9-10 is Indiana, Washington. Indiana is just banged up beyond belief. You know, Miles Turner is the latest to go down with a foot injury. He's out indefinitely. I don't know what that means in terms of his status for the play-in, but you know, we're probably what, 3 weeks away from this, so I don't know. You know, Sabonis has missed a couple games in a row now. TJ Warren still, I don't think there's been an update saying he's anywhere near a return. So if it's an Indiana, Washington 9-10, Mort, mm-hmm. who are you picking?
Again, it's a good question. I will be remiss if I didn't mention the fact, even though it was against the Pistons, Indiana won last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to read you their starting lineup, okay?
Oh, boy.
O'Shea Brissett.
Yep.
Or Brissett. I'm not sure how you pronounce that last name.
Who has been playing very well.
He has. And it's a good contract that they signed him to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm Brogdon, Edmund Sumner, Caris LeVert, and Jakar Sampson. That was their starting unit.
Sounds like a process lineup.
Completely. And they still won. I still think the Pacers are just so fundamentally sound, and if their guys come back, then I think that's theirs, right? I mean, I almost have to assume at this point.
I don't know, man. The Wizards have been pretty good lately.
They have, but I think the talent level overall in Indiana, when guys are healthy,
yeah,
is bigger. But I totally agree. If we don't know when those guys are going to return, this is going to be a wide open game.
Yeah. I mean, the Wizards have won 7 straight, 9 of their last 10. They've beaten mm-hmm. Golden State twice. They beat Utah. Otherwise, they've played a bunch of patsies, mostly Orlando, Sacramento, Detroit, 2 against OKC. So you don't want to get too high on them because look at the caliber of competition they've faced. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one ultimately comes down to health. Like, is Miles Turner back in the fold? Is Sabonis back in the fold? If so, I'd like Indiana's chances more. But I do want to point out more that Russell Westbrook has been playing a lot better, a lot more in control as of late. So, you know, combined.
Why would you need to point this out? I already did a tweet on it that you responded to. Now you're just making me sound like I'm a hater on this podcast. Wow.
I want you to have your again, every time Westbrook has one of these stretches, I want to just commemorate it for when he inevitably starts shooting below 40 from the field again, doing Boston Terry Rozier imitation.
And I beat you to the punch, my man.
You did.
Because I did go to Twitter and say, look, I am usually a critic of his, but he's played so much better recently. Like, efficiency-wise, he's still below league average,
sure,
even when he's playing super well, which that's infuriating to me.
Yeah.
But the guy is averaging almost 14 rebounds over the past, I think, 10 games or something, 9 or 10 games.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So I was looking through his career numbers. He is 0.1 assist away from averaging 11 assists, and if he does that, it would be the first time in his career it's not just a normal triple-double. It would even be 11-plus rebounds and 11-plus assists. I mean, say what you will about the merit of the triple-double stat, and Lord knows, I think it is highly overrated.
Mm-hmm.
That's still impressive. Like, for a 6'3 point guard to come in and average 11-plus points and 11-plus assists while still giving you 22 points, good Lord. Like, statistically, Russ has to be one of the greatest of all times. If you just look if you just look it through the lens of stats, I mean, it's almost criminal what he's doing. Like, over his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons, good Lord, he's averaging 25.6 points, 9.8 rebounds, and 10 assists. That means he's practically averaging a triple-double over his past 5 seasons.
That's truly wild. Yeah, I mean, if not for his inefficiency, he would have broken every advanced metric permanently.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is Russ since the All-Star break. 23.7 points on 45.1 shooting, 12.6 rebounds, 12.1 assists.
Yeah.
That's over 25 games. That's like half the damn season.
It's impressive. It's impressive. What I want to do, and I really haven't, I haven't had the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to do like a deep dive into, you know, what his shooting percentages are. One thing is you can look at the splits for the wins and losses,
mm-hmm.
but it's also a matter of him catching fire at a certain time and a certain rhythm. Like, but if you go through the splits, right, and in the wins, it's no surprise when you win, you play better. But his true shooting percentage jumps by almost 3 percentage points. And that matters. Like, him being offensively efficient, it just does so much to the... It has a ripple effect. That was the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. For the entire Wizards team. Like, because otherwise they have to, like, clean up for his bad shot mechanic or shot selection and whatnot. But when he's hitting those shots, it's like, oh, okay, we don't have to come and save this game.
Yeah.
We can just let him ride, and then we'll follow up, we'll play off of him, and then it kind of works. So it's, yeah, no, when he is efficient and aggressive in the right sense, he's a game changer. And when he's not, he's also a game changer, but in the other direction.
Right. That's, I mean, going back to the variance, you know, in that play-in mix, if you get good Russ for that game, all of a sudden, the Wizards could possibly win the 8th seed. If you get good Russ in the first game, bad Russ in the second game, probably not going to go well, even though Bradley Beal is a human torch.
Right.
So, regardless of who wins these two play-in games, Mort, do you think any of these teams, Miami, Charlotte, Washington, Indiana, even, you know, Atlanta or Boston, if they fall, do any of them stand a chance to upset whichever of the Nets, Sixers, and Bucks? You know, we don't know what order they're going to be in, but whichever teams they end up facing, can any of these teams upset them in the first round?
Well, so the Hornets have 3 speedy guards, which automatically means that they're going to upset for the Philadelphia 76ers, right?
Yeah, unless Matisse Thybulle starts.
That's true. No, I realistically doubt it. I will say it would be interesting to see a Miami-Brooklyn lineup or a matchup.
Mm.
Just because of the offense-to-defense ratio. Like, Brooklyn far away the better offense, Miami far away the better defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be interesting to see if they could keep those guys in check. But I ultimately, if I was a betting man, I would still have my money on the Nets coming out of that series. But nevertheless, it would be interesting. And then also, if it's Boston-Philly,
yeah,
that would be super fun because that would have one of those, you know, components of psychology included.
Yep.
Where they beat them last year.
Yep.
They've historically, in recent history at least, played better. So that could be like one of those fun subplots to a potential series. Would the Celtics win that series? I have my doubts, but I do think they could give you a run for the money.
Yeah. Oh, that game, that series would go at least 6 just for the psychological demons alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Yeah, I mean, Miami-Milwaukee in the first round would be interesting as well. We're talking about playoff rematches from last year. Did all of this Bucks experimentation pay off, or are we still going to see the same, you know, Bud runs into a wall and doesn't have a counterpunch in the playoffs? That'd be pretty fascinating.
I have thoughts on that, because okay. I feel pretty confident that Milwaukee will really bounce back in that series.
Yeah,
I think. So here's the thing. When we talk about great players, like not good players, great players, like historic top 10 candidate players, mm-hmm. all of them have at some point had to return to a defeat and overcome certain things. Like Michael Jordan with the Pistons and, you know, the whole drill. Giannis Antetokounmpo is on that list of great players.
Yes.
This is a guy who is currently on the fast track to becoming one of the top 10 players of all time. I fully expect him to take that series personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't even care about Butt's, you know, rotations or adjustments or whatnot. This would be a Giannis series. That would be him like, oh, you took that away from me last year. I won MVP, I won DPOY, and I came up short. Not this year. Not this year again. Not going to happen. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take this on my own, on my own back. I'm going to carry everyone and I have, if I have to. And when I'm sitting, I'm going to have Bobby Portis launch 16 threes in their face.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think this is also where the upgrade from Eric Bledsoe to Drew Holiday, that'd be a huge difference maker in that series.
What has happened to Eric Bledsoe? Let's just take a two-minute reprieve.
What has happened? Let's save it for the West, because we'll get there.
Okay, but I'm going to forget that. So you promised me to make a mental note, because, good Lord, that is just night and day for the point guard spot in Milwaukee right now.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this much. I wouldn't necessarily bank on any of these teams to pull off an upset, but I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility. And again, this is where that difference between the one seed in the East and the two or the three, mm-hmm. if you're the one seed and you probably get one of Charlotte, Indiana, Washington instead of Miami in the first round and then Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee in the second round and then whichever, you know, like you get two of those top three teams, it just makes the road so much more difficult for you. So the Nets don't really seem to be caring about seeding, which, you know, it makes sense. They just want to be healthy. The Sixers had a brutal week, but they have a pretty easy rest of season schedule. I think we'll know a lot about the top three seeds after next week, because the Bucks and Nets play each other twice. Bucks also have a comically easy schedule, but, you know, that series may end up determining more than anything else that happens throughout the rest of the regular season. I think that'll probably tell us which one of these teams is going to end up number one.
I still like Milwaukee coming out of the East. I don't know if I'm crazy, but it just feels like that Drew Holiday trade, man.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think that's what does it. I think they've sacrificed wins this year by tinkering around with a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have this idea that when the playoffs start, they are going to be locked in a mode that we haven't seen before.
Just tell me what version of the Nets, which members of the Nets are healthy at the start of the playoffs. I'm reluctant to make any grand proclamations until I see.
All of them.
Ooh, okay.
I'm not sitting here saying, you know, the Bucks are going to win it. I'm saying this is the sense that I'm having right now. It feels as though this is the year. And, you know, it's like, remember how many times we had these seasons where some team was assembled that was just nuts, and then it ultimately just out in the playoffs?
Yep.
I'm not saying that's the Nets, but I have this feeling that it could be.
Oh, it definitely could.
I hope I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong, but I think it could be a situation of them just not having enough time together mm-hmm. and... Look, the Bucks are also somewhat well oiled. I know they have new components, but it's still Giannis as Chris Middleton at the very least.
Yeah.
Like those two are there. And they're an institution. So, yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing anyone upsetting the Bucks at least.
So before we go to the West, let's talk about the Bulls and the Raptors, Mort. Both are a game and a half behind the Wizards for that final spot in the play-in tournament. The Raptors, this has just been the season from hell from them. You know, they won four straight and then lost against the Knicks. So they're still alive, but they also, this is their upcoming schedule. Cleveland on Monday. Second game of back-to-back Tuesday against the Brooklyn Nets. Then a four-game trip at Denver, at Utah, at Lakers, at Clippers. Then three games home, Washington, Memphis, Clippers. Then at Chicago, at Dallas, and against the Pacers.
Yeah, bye-bye.
I think so as well. And they have been resting guys liberally already. Like, they clearly do not care about making it to the playoffs, nor should they. You know, you've had a great run. Like, don't risk Kyle Lowry getting hurt at the end of a meaningless season. Even if, I mean, again, like, I'll ask the same question. Even if they somehow make the play-in tournament and make it to the, you know, win the number eight seed, they don't stand a chance of upsetting any of these teams, right?
No. Yeah. No, I don't think so. By the way, while we're on the subject of the Raptors, because I have a feeling this might be one of the last times of the year the Raptors are talking
about. It might be, yeah.
Before this season started, I said, and you agreed with me, that in order for OG Anunoby to solidify himself a little bit more, he had to take more shots, and especially from range. He's done that, man. He's like really done that. I mean, almost doubled his 3-point rate from outside, and he's even improved from a percentage perspective. He's averaging over 15 points now. He's no longer this modest offensive guy with great defense. He is now a legitimate two-way player. Yeah. That development to me has been fantastic to follow.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wonder, because he's only 23, that's what we kind of forget about him. He was super young. Next year, when he goes into his fifth year, can't you smell that it's like there's another leap here? Maybe not, you know, a quantum leap where he comes in and averages 20 or 22 or anything, but it seems that this offensive evolution that he's going through right now, it's not slowing down next year.
Yeah, I mean, enjoy the Raptors being down while you can, because when they come back next year, regardless of what happens with Kyle Lowry in free agency, they're still going to have Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby. I don't think they acquire Gary Trent Jr. at the trade deadline if they aren't planning on re-signing him.
Right.
Chris Boucher as well. Like, they have a nice foundation still.
And DeMar DeRozan could come back at some point?
Yeah, there you go.
I have opened that door. I did a YouTube video on this. I wouldn't be shocked to see a DeMar DeRozan return. They had to work out the cap hole situation with Kyle Lowry, but I have a feeling they are going to figure something out. Why wouldn't you want him to come back there?
So, Chicago. Let's turn to Chicago.
Yeah. All right, I'm just going to say it. So first and foremost, I think the Bulls were super, super smart when they made the Nikola Vucevic trade in protecting the two first-rounders that they sent out, which is 2021 and 2023. They are top four protected. If they don't convey, they become top three protected the next year. And if that still doesn't convey, it gets converted into two second-rounders. So at no point will the Bulls give up like a first overall pick. Mm-hmm. At no point. That's just not in the cards, which I've mentioned the YouTube channel several times, but I also did a video on that. I think that's just smart GMing to do that. Now, because there's a Cade Cunningham in this draft, because there is a top five of players that could be really, really good, I can't help but think, given the schedule that the Bulls have ahead of them, if it's time to throw in the towel for this year and just go, you know what? Let's see if we can maximize the odds from the lottery odds so we have a higher chance of jumping up in the draft. all they have to do is jump up, because that means they are guaranteed a top four pick. Because if you move up from outside of that, you can't move up from like 12 to 5. If you move up, it's going to be to the top four, which is exactly the range that they have draft pick protection in. So, Brian, this is where I want your input. Mm-hmm. Is it entirely crazy for the Bulls to just throw in the towel for the rest of the year? Say to Zach LaVine, who's out right now, just, nope, your season is over.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, shutting down Nikola Vucevic as well. Just go all in on the gravy draft train. See how high you can get up. Like, let's say they finish with the league's, I don't know, sixth worst record. Then they would have a 42.1% chance of making it into the top four. Now, that's going to be difficult. I don't think they're going to go as high, because the Oklahoma City currently occupy that spot, and they're 20 and 40 on the season.
Oh, yeah, you're not catching them.
Yeah, I may not do that. But look, just as long as they get as high up as they can, they would have roughly one-third of a chance to move into the top four. Are those odds good enough to go that route?
Well, I mean, they might not have a choice, because I want to read you the rest of their schedule.
Exactly. Yes, I'm glad you bring that up.
At Miami Monday, at New York, home against Milwaukee, at Atlanta, again, Trae Young will probably miss that game. Home against Philly, at Charlotte, Boston at home, second night of back-to-back, at Detroit, versus Brooklyn, versus Toronto, at Brooklyn, versus Milwaukee. Now, again, those two Brooklyn games, the Milwaukee game, those top three seeds might be pretty settled by that point, so there's no guarantee that they're playing all their starters. But it might not be settled by that point. They might actually be playing all their starters. But, like, the only game in there against a bad team is at Detroit.
And that game is losable.
Yeah. Because the Pistons are frisky. They'll end up pulling all their good players with 4 minutes left, which is what they did last night against the Pacers. But, yeah, I mean, you could still feasibly lose that game.
You could feasibly lose out for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Or at least go, like, how many games they have? They have 12 games left? Like, 2 and 10? 1 and 11?
Yeah.
And that's not even, like, them actively trying to tank. That's just, this might happen, unfold naturally.
Right, and that's why I'm asking. Should they throw in the towel right now and just go, screw it? Let's see if we can get into that top four and walk away with one of Kate Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, or Jalen Green.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only concern is kind of the message it sends to the roster, especially after making a win-now move like acquiring Vucevic. And, right, like, you know, you'll have to get Zach LaVine to sign off on of taking course much longer to recover from health and safety protocols than a lot of other guys have. But
no, you have to make a decision. You have to make a discussion. Absolutely. I want to clarify this. At no point am I insinuating that you don't get the roster included on this. You sit down with Vooch. You sit down with LaVine. You sit down with some of the main cores, which is not Lauri Markkanen. And you figure it out from there. You talk to them and you say, look, if we get into the top four, we have a chance of selecting a really, really attractive rookie. And we can trade that rookie for help, immediate help. Well, of course, if it's Cade Cunningham, you don't do a damn thing. But if it's like Jalen Green.
Or Evan Mobley.
Yeah, okay. That's maybe. I think Mobley is pretty solidified as the number two guy, in my opinion. But
do you need him with having just acquired Vucevic?
So Mobley is just a front court player. He can play both positions. And also, he is a very high-level defender, which Vooch is not. But it does raise an interesting question. Like, at what point do you trade them off? But look, Evan Mobley is so good that teams are going to offer a haul for him. So maybe depending on the offer that you get back, if you win the second overall pick or something along those lines, then you could tell those guys, this is an attempt. This is absolutely a gamble. We're not going to be you know, we're not going to be a sure thing to make it into the top four, but we're also definitely not a sure thing of making the play-in tournament. In fact, look at the schedule we have. We have guys out. We have young guys playing a lot of minutes who can't really produce at the level whether we need them to right now. And then you sell them on the whole, let's see if we can move up to top four angle, after which you can trade one of those primary rookies if you get into it. Again, Cunningham excluded. I don't know. I don't know if they go for it. I think it's a fair point. You raise it. Like, would Zach LaVine and Vooch go for it? I don't know. But I think it's an interesting subplot that you could introduce to this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can sell it as we want to test some of these young guys even more. Like, we want to really, these last 12 games, we want to see exactly what Patrick Williams brings to the table and, you know, push him beyond his boundaries so we can figure out what type of player we want to build around him. Kobe White had a very big game last night against Miami. Can we, you know, what role is he best at? Can we really build around him as a point guard? I know your answer already, so don't say it. But, you know, is Daniel Theis a guy worth re-signing next year? Lauri Markkanen, I think the ship has sailed. But, you know, getting some more data points on some of their
Troy Brown Jr.
Yeah. So getting some
Devon upcoming. Dotson.
Right. So, like, you know, with free agency coming up, I could see they have incentive to do so, especially given their schedule and knowing, you know, again, they're not going to beat any of these Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly in the first round, even if they get there. So,
right.
You know, it's certainly an interesting subplot.
Would you do it though? Would you do it if you were Arturis Karnišovas, and let's say you had the blessing of Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic to do this, would you do it?
I don't think I would do it just yet. I think I would let nature take its course, and I think you're going to just lose those next couple games anyway.
Yeah,
and then you can pull the ripcord.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
like I think if you get past that Philly game and you're 1-4 in that stretch, like your only win was against a Trae Young-less Atlanta team, or maybe you lose all five, and then you're looking at the rest and you're like, okay, yeah, we're dead in the water here. Then I think you can play out the string, but yeah, I think it's probably a week or so early.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting, and let's just turn this from like a Bulls-oriented thing into like a league-wide thing. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's interesting if you have a general, like with draft pick protection, right? If you have a pick out there that you know is protected, but maybe you underperform and you go into this situation where you say, wow, we can actually end up having our cake and eating it too, in this case, trading for Vucevic for a pick that they might actually be able to retain because they just weren't good enough. Like I think that's interesting because it has the ripple effect. Let's say the Bulls actually succeed in retaining their pick for this year. Then they grow, I have to assume, substantially better. Be that if they get Cade or if they move one of their other picks, you know, 2-4, for an established veteran who can come in and help them, then maybe they become a playoff team next year. That would also lessen the draft pick value of that in 2023, ultimately meaning that you end up paying significantly less for a Nikola Vucevic, for example. So to me, it's a matter of when teams find themselves in this situation, and this isn't like a first-timer. This has happened before. I think there is merit in just chasing after it if you have a protected pick. I really do.
Yeah. So let's go to the West now, Mort.
Yeah.
Utah, Phoenix, Clippers, Nuggets are locked. They are going to make the playoffs. They are not, you know, the Nuggets, the four seed, are 6.5 games up on the 7 seed Blazers with 12 games left. Like, it's, you know, they're safe in there. The Los Angeles Lakers have lost 3 straight games. Anthony Davis is back. LeBron has not made his return yet, but it sounds like that is somewhat imminent. They are 2.5 up on the Blazers. Do you think there is any chance that the Los Angeles Lakers slip to the 7 and are in the play-in tournament?
I hope so, because that could be so much fun. That would be the strangest thing that has happened, and I would love every second of it simply because of like the drama and the theatrics of it all. I would love it. I would absolutely love it. Now, do I think it's reasonable or realistic? No. This team is a little bit too deep. AD is going to get some traction. When LeBron returns, you know, he's not human. So
right.
I have to assume that he's going to figure something out like right as he comes back. So I would be very, very surprised is my point. But no, it could be so much fun to see them end up in the play-in tournament.
Yeah. Their next four are at Orlando, at Washington, home against Sacramento, home against Toronto. So I think this subplot lives for another week, and then they are going to have cemented themselves in the five seed, which really sucks for the Denver Nuggets, who are probably going to be the four. And we're going to get a Lakers-Nuggets conference finals rematch in the first round this year.
Why is that bad?
Well, it sucks for the Nuggets.
Why?
I would think they'd much rather play the Mavericks or the Blazers. If you're trying to measure success of a season, it often comes down to how far you advance in the playoffs. I don't think the Nuggets without Jamal Murray are beating the Lakers. So, you know, you're going to waste a Jokic MVP season with a first round playoff knockout because the Lakers had some bad luck with injuries. Like the Lakers should, talent wise, the Lakers should not be a five seed. It's just bad luck.
Right, but if you flip it around, you're also going to be catching them early on after they've just returned from injury, while they're still integrating a Andre Drummond, while LeBron and AD are probably still having a few lingering effects and testing their bodies out. Maybe that is catching them at exactly the right moment. Not saying that they would win necessarily, but look, I don't even care if it's a first-round exit for Denver. If that could be like an epic seven-game series where they are in every single game up to the final few possessions, I'll take that.
I think that is very optimistic about what would happen in that series.
I agree. I'm just saying on the off chance that the Lakers still show that they aren't really... They haven't gelled entirely yet, and LeBron might still have a few lingering effects, and I don't know, Davis as well. I'm just saying, injuries can be tricky. It isn't like when a guy returns to the court, he's like magically fully healthy. And then there's also Andre Drummond, like I mentioned, to take into consideration. He needs to be integrated alongside LeBron and AD and whatnot. I don't know. I'm just saying it could be that the Nuggets would prefer getting this version of the Lakers instead of a version of the Lakers a few years later, when they have become more battle-tested, when they have become more healthy, when Andre Drummond has been better and deeper integrated into their team.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's fair. So, assuming the Lakers are out of that play-in mix, we've got Dallas currently as the sixth seed. They're on a three-game winning streak. They are a game up on the Blazers, who are the seventh seed on a four-game losing streak. They've gone 2-8 over their last 10. Then it's Memphis at 8, San Antonio at 9, Warriors at 10. Pelicans are four games behind the Warriors, so they need to go on a big winning streak quickly if they're going to get back into this mix.
Yeah.
Dallas and Portland, which one of those teams do you think gets the six?
Dallas.
Yeah.
They played better. They played better recently. Is it crazy that despite the fact that Dame is way more seasoned than Luka, that I trust Luka more? Is that crazy?
I'll give you a reason to trust Luka more, at least over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
This is from Positive Residual, who has the remaining strength of schedule. The Dallas Mavericks have the fifth easiest schedule moving forward. The Portland Trail Blazers have the fourth toughest.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't help the situation.
No. So,
but also, it's like more than that, though. It's the size.
Mm.
Because as we come down to the end of the season, you know how teams are jockeying for position. The last few games are always a little bit more intense. They have this playoff atmosphere around them.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Dame has consistently delivered in the playoffs, so I'm not trying to downplay that, I still always would prefer a tall wing playmaker than a small-ish point guard to lead my team. Because we see what Luka can do, even when he gets trapped in the corners or whatever. Like, his size and height and whatnot just allows him to survey the entire floor at all times. And I trust that a little bit more than I trust shot-making capabilities. You know, I trust that Luka, if his shot is off, is going to give you 16 assists. Mm-hmm. I don't trust that with Dame necessarily. And I, by the way, I just want to point out right now, my heart is breaking because I'm saying negative things about Damian Lillard, and that hurts. No, it truly does. I hate saying that, but I also got to be honest. That's how I see it. I trust Luka Doncic more than I trust Damian Lillard.
Well, I mean,
I think that matters,
especially given the disparity in schedule strength. And I was about to trash talk the NBA schedule makers, and I realized this two-game series against Memphis was supposed to be in the first half of the season. It got postponed. So, but otherwise, I mean, like, they have three games against Portland. They played Memphis on Friday, they play Memphis today, and then they play Memphis again on Wednesday. And that is the 7 and the 8 right now. Like, that has major, you know, implications for playoff seeding. That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, I mean, you've got two against Memphis. You have Brooklyn, Boston. These are all okay. So it's Memphis today, then at Indiana Tuesday, at Memphis Wednesday. So it's a back to back. At Brooklyn, at Boston, at Atlanta, at Cleveland, homemans Lakers, Spurs, Rockets. Finish the season at Utah, at Phoenix, home against Denver. Meanwhile,
this was Portland?
Yeah, that's Portland. Yeah. Meanwhile, the Mavericks are at Sacramento, at Warriors, at Detroit, home against Washington, home against Sacramento, at Miami, home Brooklyn, home Cleveland, road Memphis, home New Orleans, home Toronto, at Minnesota. So, oh, man. Congratulations to the Dallas Mavericks on the number 6 seed.
Yeah.
So that,
and I didn't even take schedule into account, honestly. I just looked at like the top tier talent level. But yeah, I agree. That schedule is brutal for Portland compared to Dallas.
Yeah. So that may set up a Portland Memphis rematch, play-in tournament rematch in the first game of the 7-8, because the Spurs have the toughest remaining schedule in the NBA. Right. The Spurs were only a half game back of the Memphis Grizzlies right now. So who would you take in the rematch, Moore? Do you think the Grizzlies could get some revenge?
No, see, this is where I trust Dame.
Okay.
let's make that painfully clear. This is where I think Dame has a severe advantage. And I love Ja Morant, but Dame right now is... No, he's on a different planet than Ja is from a floor game perspective, I think. I have Portland going into that and pretty significantly... You know, that three guard slash wing, whatever you want to call it, lineup of Lillard, Powell, and McCollum, you know, man, that is tough to stop. Mm-hmm. And then you have Robert Covington. I know he's inconsistent, but he's bounced back from a three-point perspective a little bit recently. You can still bang someone up with Enes Kanter inside who'll just gobble up everything. Carmelo is probably going to give you at least one, if not two, like slightly vintage mellow performances.
Mm-hmm.
Yusuf Nurkic is around. Jaren Jackson has returned for Memphis, but he is still very early in that process. And I realize as well that they just lost to Memphis the other day. I really do. But even so, I'm going Portland there. I really am.
Yeah, I think I would as well. But I would be super entertained by that game.
They
lost to Portland. Jaren Jackson came off the bench, had 23 points on 10 of 14 shooting in 25 minutes. So
they won against Portland.
Portland lost. Yeah, but welcome back Jaren Jackson Jr. We've been waiting for that for a long time.
And also there's the fact of that game. I don't think Ja Morant is going to drop 33 and 13 assists like on Dame with any regular basis.
Right.
On 65% shooting, no less. And look, Dylan Brooks, the biggest Kobe chucker since Kobe himself, shooting 58% from the field. Don't think that's sustainable either. So,
not betting on it to say it. Well, but Jonas Valanciunas missed that game with a concussion.
He did. Yes, that is true. That's a fair point.
So, look, I hope we get Portland-Memphis. That's going to be a super fun game if that's...
Yeah, definitely. That's one of those must-watch games that you just cannot, for any legitimate reason, miss out on. You have to.
So then, right now, it'd be Spurs-Warriors in the 9-10. I feel like, should I preemptively apologize to Sarah and Jesse for you?
Oh, come on. Like, you don't have Steph?
Dude, what he is doing in the last month or so is just, there are no words. Right. There are just no words.
Like, look, even if the Spurs as a team is a little bit better, which I think they are in a wholesome mentality.
Agreed.
I just can't in good conscience sit here and go, well, you know, they're going up against Steph. It's fine. They'll manage. Steph is leading the damn league in scoring. He's hitting over 5 triples per game. The dude is unreal. He's unreal. Brian, for crying out loud, he's hit 266 triples in 52 games.
It's outrageous.
And I mean, it's completely insane.
It's like in a winner go home, one game. There's no way Steph Curry is not jacking at least 25 shots, at least 15 threes, probably hitting at least 8 or 9 of them. You know, and the Spurs, in theory, have, you know, DeJounte Murray, Derek White, they have good defensive guards who might be able to give Steph a little bit of trouble. But I don't know if anyone can give Steph trouble right now. It's just he's on another plane of existence.
Yeah. No, you could put up, you know what you could do? You could go out there. You can find prime Scottie Pippen. And you could put him on Wardell, Stephen Curry II, and he would still give Scottie the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I'm just not that optimistic about San Antonio's chances in this one. I'm sorry, Sarah and Jesse. I really am. But, like, you guys know. Like, I don't think anyone would disagree with that notion. Like, it's Steph.
Yeah. We've just seen this movie too many times before.
Right.
Like, come down in the playoffs or in the stretch run of the regular season. Like, we know what Steph Curry is capable of. And this is what we've said about the Spurs all year. We really like the composition of this team. We like the young talent. But they just don't have that top 25 guy. Like, DeMar DeRozan is the closest thing. I don't think he's in that mix anymore. So this is where knowing that Steph Curry is going at least 40 points in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Draymond Green, I don't think we can say enough words about, you know, for everyone who thought he was like totally washed up last year. I hope you've enjoyed your season of egg because he's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Like what? He had 19 assists the other night.
He had in like 12 rebounds. I will say this and 2 points. Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to say. So you and I, we talked about Draymond a couple months ago, and one of the things you and I we agreed on was he does look washed from a scoring perspective. Like, he's just not a threat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
From an offensive perspective, and well, from a passing perspective, sure, but scoring perspective specifically, like, he's just a non-factor. He's Dennis Rodman now. Just in terms of not being a guy you game plan for as a scorer.
Right.
But it seems that he has more or less redirected that energy. It's not that he lost it. He just redirected it into defense and playmaking instead. Which, I mean, the guy's averaging 9 assists almost per game now.
Mm-hmm.
He's so difficult to gauge as a player right now, I think, from an offensive perspective. But I don't mind. Like, he gives you everything you need to. But it also only works in conjunction with Steph, though.
Right, right. Yeah, those
like,
two
like, put him on the Charlotte Hornets, and he doesn't.
Oh, God. Yeah, those two should never be allowed to play basketball without one another.
Right.
They're just so perfect together.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's another thing that, you know, Draymond... His intelligence on defense, like that Warriors team, I just keep coming back to it. They have no business being in this mix of play-in tournament teams. They have no business being around 500. If not for Steph and Draymond, they would be the worst team in basketball by far. But those two guys are just so good that they have lifted the entire roster around them. And I would, you know, I would bet on it's picking them to beat the Spurs is not a bet on the Warriors a better constructed team than the Spurs. They are not, but they just have Steph and Draymond, and the Spurs don't. And sometimes it's that easy.
Yeah. Did you and I make a mistake, Brian, when we discussed Defensive Player of the Year awards race and didn't bring up Draymond?
He should just be, it's like the perennial, like Pop should always be in the Coach of the Year discussion. Draymond should just always be in the DPOY discussion.
Yeah, but I don't even think we gave him a mention.
No, no. Yeah, I think we said, you know, it's Gobert and Simmons were the top two. So we focused most of our time on that. Yeah. But yeah.
And I still agree with that, but it just seems wrong to at least not point out the fact that Draymond is still utterly elite on that end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's say the Warriors win this game. Would you pick them to beat Memphis in that for the number 8 seed?
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably would too.
Yeah.
I'd be close. Memphis has a lot. Memphis is just like, I don't know.
Yeah, sorry. No. You know why? You know, here's the thing. They're young.
Yeah.
They're really young. Yeah. And I think Steph is going to come out like gangbusters.
That's possible.
And completely eat their souls in the first quarter.
That's certainly and afterwards, possible.
They're yeah. just like, oh yeah, we're young. And Steph is like, hell yeah, you are. Yeah. Oh yeah, here's another three right in your face.
Yeah. I mean, with Jaren Jackson back, if he weren't back, I'd be more bearish on their chances. But having Ja, having Jaren Jackson, having Valanciunas, you know, again, Dylan Brooks is probably the bellwether. Does he shoot 11 of 19 or 4 of 19? I can't be sure either way. But hopefully if he's having one of those 4 of 19 games, his teammates are just like, stop effing shooting. Or,
right.
You know, Taylor Jenkins just pulls him from the game.
But what can Jaren Jackson provide defensively? Because there's really no one a threat that he can guard. Like, he can't guard Steph. He would get burned. Look, that's just the way. Looney's not an offensive presence either way.
Yeah.
Like, Draymond is not an offensive option in that regard either way. Yeah, sure, Jaren can guard him for the score. That's fine. That's easy. But he can't play him for the pass. Draymond is just too smart. Like, even the best defensive guys has not been able to stop Draymond from passing the basketball.
Yeah.
You can put him on Kelly Oubre or Andrew Wiggins, but you know what? Those two guys, they're too quick for him. So Jaren Jackson's defensive influence is going to be absolutely minimized in this game. You would have to redirect all of his energy to becoming a floor spacer, a scorer. Like, he has to come in with the mindset, yeah, I have to put up 36 points.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably put him on Draymond anyway and just say, you know, you don't care about him as a scorer, leave him wide open from three, but you know, use your length to affect his passing lanes. Because if you are at least disrupting that part of their offense, and you know, honestly, sure, if they're running Steph, Dre pick and rolls, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is big enough to get out and contest pretty quickly on a Steph, you know, if he goes under a screen.
Oh, Brian, you are entering dangerous territory here. I get what you're saying. It's Steph, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You can initiate that pick and roll 45 feet away.
Right, and Steph is launching before. Steph's launching before he even gets around the screen.
Like, Jaren Jackson does not intimidate Stephen Curry.
No.
At all.
No.
I don't care how long he is or agile he is. He is not affecting Steph. At this, right now, the Stephen Curry that we're watching right now, it doesn't matter who the hell you are. Rudy Gobert could be up in his grill, and he would still get a shot up, and likely hit it, and then turn around before he's hit it.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. Like, when we talked about, like, the MVP last week as well, like, the awards thing, I had a couple people DM me, like, Steph? Question mark. Like, no, the record isn't good enough.
Right, right.
But if it was, I think we would agree that he would be right there.
Oh yeah,
in the like maybe even. Screw it. I'm going to say it. Like, maybe even higher than Jokic.
I mean, yeah, if he wasn't playing on a 500 team.
And right, right, right.
You know, it sucks that that factors into the equation, but it definitely does.
Right. If they won 60% of their games.
Yeah.
He might have been the favorite.
He'd be in the top three, I think, for sure. Yeah.
Like, no Clay whatsoever. The narrative would be in his favor as well.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So yeah, I'll,
this guy is so wild. Okay.
I'll use that as a jumping off point for the last big question of, that we asked us about the East, too. Regardless of which of these teams win the 7 and 8 seed, you know, right now it's looking like Utah, Phoenix, Clippers, they'll be the top three seeds in some order.
Yeah.
Could Portland, Memphis, San Antonio, Golden State, even Dallas, do any of those teams pose a threat to upset one of those top three?
Yeah. Man, I promise you I don't hate the Suns. I promise you I don't. But, I mean, yeah. It, like, let's say it's the Lakers that end up down
there. Oh, God.
Right? I mean, Lakers against Phoenix, you can't tell me that the Phoenix Suns are going to be a lock.
Well, that, that series. Is that even considered? Like, I know seeding-wise that'd be considered an upset, but I bet, like, in terms of Vegas odds, the Lakers would be favored in that series.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then comes the interesting team here. Now, if I were to put money on it, I would still go Phoenix. But I do think Dallas could be interesting.
Yeah, I could see it.
How do they stop this team? How do they stop Luka from doing whatever Luka wants?
That's assuming a healthy Porzingis, right?
Yes, and given that this was an ankle injury, then I'm also slightly concerned that he wouldn't be there. Now, if Kristaps is out of there, yeah, that that definitely changes the narrative a whole lot. If Kristaps is in there and he is reliable and healthy, I just think it could be a... Well, it could be a series wherein Dallas, at the very least, puts the fear of Michael Jordan into him.
Yeah, I mean, I think relative to the East, where I, you know, Miami is probably the only team with a real shot unless Boston slips down. The only team that even remotely concerned, like, I don't think the Nets, Sixers, or Bucks, you know, they'll respect the Hornets, but I don't think they'd really be afraid of them. I think in the West, you can make a case for Dallas, Portland, and the Warriors. Memphis, like, Memphis will be annoying. Memphis would take you to six, but I don't think they could win any of those, that series against any one of those. But, like, the other three, I mean, the Warriors, again, like, I don't know that they would win, but I don't want to bet against Steph Curry after what he's been doing for the last month.
Yeah.
And then Portland, we've seen it, you know, Dame time and again in the playoffs.
Right. But again, it's Phoenix. Like, yeah. Phoenix is the team that I think has the potential there of being, well, potential. That's almost like a positive word, and it isn't a positive word. They have the highest risk factor of the top three, between them, Utah, and the Clippers, I feel, in terms of being upset.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is just the youth of DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just a question, really, of if whether or not they're seasoned enough, the experience level, you know, collectively. Of course, Chris Paul has the experience level, but the guys around him, right? And then whether or not Devin Booker is ready for, you know, taking that step up. One thing is that you can be an awesome player in the regular season, but if you're a great player, you have to make your mark in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So is he ready for that? I hope so. That, this is not me saying he's not, by the way, just to absolutely clarify. I'm saying I don't know because we haven't seen him in that capacity before.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just don't know. And if, look, if Phoenix comes out and sweeps everyone and we are left, you know, here with X on our face, I'll take that. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, look, DeAndre Ayton has been playing a lot better in the last month or so of the season. And that was, I know we talked about them a few weeks ago. That was kind of one of our big concerns, was which version of DeAndre Ayton do we get? If we get the version that's been, you know, pretty dominant over the last month, then, you know, I'm picking Phoenix to win any against Portland, against Dallas, against Golden State. I agree with you, though. Like, of those three teams, I'm probably least concerned about the Clippers, honestly.
Assuming
health. Assuming Kawhi's back. Assuming Paul George is back. And, like, Utah, same deal. Like, Donovan Mitchell's out. Assuming he's back. Like, this is just big, you know, best case scenario. Everyone is healthy for the playoffs. Injuries don't exist in this horrible season. I don't know that I would pick an upset in the first round other than Lakers over Nuggets, quote-unquote upset. But I think, you know, all of those teams, I don't think there's a single sweep in the West.
No, I would be surprised as well. But to your point about the Clippers, have you seen what they've done over the last month?
Yeah, just annihilate teams?
They've been so good.
Yeah.
They've been, and they are flying under the radar because of what happened last year, but they've been so good.
Yeah, they won on a 7-game winning streak, lost to Philly, and then went on a 4-game winning streak.
Right, and they lost to Philly by 3 points.
Yeah, I believe Kawhi didn't play in that game, if I remember correctly.
Oh,
he didn't play.
Nope, he didn't.
Tobias Harris didn't play for Philly, but...
That's not a wash.
Right. I think the Sixers will happily make that trade.
Why is it that... I think that's an interesting question. So why is it that we're sleeping on the Clippers?
I think...
Just because last year?
Yeah, I think the Bucks and the Clippers are in the same boat.
But it's like it was 1 year. Of course, they also needed to get acclimated to each other. And right now, it just seems to be working. That Kawhi-Paul George relationship, that's just working.
And as much as we mocked the addition of playoff Rondo, he's been a nice addition to that team.
He has. He's been really good. Now, I hope it's going to maintain for him, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think there are, before the Jamal Murray injury, I thought there were 5 legit candidates to come out of the West.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Clippers, I completely agree. I think the Clippers and the Bucks, it would not surprise me if we see a Clippers-Bucks finals.
And that was what we thought last year as well.
Yeah.
We may get it just a year later than we thought.
Right, exactly.
And I think this might be a good place to wrap up the podcast, Brian. I wouldn't be shocked if the Los Angeles Clippers ended up lifting the Larry O'Brien Championship Trophy this year.
Nor would I. But I do want to go back before we wrap up. Because you wanted to bring up Eric Bledsoe, because we can hit on the Pelicans briefly as
That's true. See, I told you I'd forget it.
Yep. Yeah, see? I got you. So they are 4 games behind the Warriors. I think it's, you know, barring a miracle, they are probably out of the mix here.
Right.
Where do you think the Pelicans go from here?
Into the offseason.
Sure, but especially with,
I don't know,
with Bledsoe. I mean, he is... Is there a single player in any team whose fans hate them as much as Pelicans fans seem to hate Eric Bledsoe?
It was really bad before last week, and then Sunday happened against the Knicks. Did you watch that game?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Pelicans were up 3.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah,
where Bledsoe was
like ripping into him after it. Yeah,
Bledsoe was told to foul.
Yeah,
he didn't, and afterwards he was like, "I didn't." He didn't say I didn't pay attention. He said something else that was pretty egregious,
even worse.
Like I was out of focus or whatever. And even when the game went into overtime, you know, for some reason the Knicks started leaving the court, and he did as well. No, they didn't really seem to realize it was an overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Affair. No, but he's just so disconnected. Like, and this is the thing with him. After leaving Phoenix, I get that he played well for the Bucks last year, but he fed off of that attention that to Giannis and to Chris Middleton and whatnot. And he also played limited minutes. He played 27 minutes per game. Mm-hmm. But he's not a consistent shooter. He's not a consistent free throw shooter as well, for that matter. He's not a consistent playmaker. His defense, which was once his calling card, comes and goes. His intensity in games also comes and goes. There are certain nights where he really gets up for it. And then there are other nights where he just cannot be bothered. I don't think at this point in time he's even a starter in the NBA on any team. He's that bad.
Not a good team. He's that bad.
No, it would have to be something just like the Pistons right now, but he's been horrible. He's been absolutely horrible.
Well, he could move into that like six-man, like what we're seeing with Derrick Rose, where like Derrick Rose isn't starting on a good team anymore, but he can still make an impact.
Does he care enough, though?
He might not.
I just don't know if I would trust him with anything at this point, like in terms of responsibility. If I am the Pelicans, I am doing whatever is in my power to get off of him during this offseason. Now, that's probably going to mean that I would have to sacrifice a draft pick or something, which, you know, well, that's not great.
He's only got, I believe he only has one more guaranteed year left on his deal. I think that's, so, yeah.
Partially guaranteed for the final year for $3.9 million. Yes.
Okay, yeah. So, like, yes, I agree. You do have to, no team is going to just willingly take him.
Right.
But, you know, do you have, I don't know if you have to give up a first rounder to get, like, maybe you can use 2 seconds or, like.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, here's an idea. Here's a crazy idea. What if you just look at Bledsoe as salary filler and you find out what a package of Jackson Hayes and Kyra Lewis, and by the way, I love Kyra Lewis, and Nikhil Alexander Walker can give you. Mm. Because our friend of the podcast, Mason Ginsberg, we are in a group DM thing with him on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And he said something that actually inspired me to write an article on Forbes about players who could realistically pick up the qualifying offer and become unrestricted free agents 5 years into their NBA careers. And it was Mason who said, oh, Zion Williamson could be a candidate for that because he's already playing at like an all-NBA level.
Right.
Which means you can't really gauge him as a 20-year-old rookie. You have to look at him as the star that he is, and you have to put components around him to start winning immediately if you want to retain him. Otherwise, he's going to be guaranteed major contracts regardless. He's going to have all the money in the world from endorsements. Like, money's not going to be the main issue, so he can afford to pick up the qualifying offer and say, hey, I want to play for the Knicks. Let me go to the Knicks and do so as an unrestricted free agent. So Mason's point is, let's build around him immediately. Like, Jackson Hayes, Kyra Lewis, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, they're a couple years away. Package them and Eric Bledsoe for something that is good right now. I don't know what that is, but it's at the very least an intriguing idea, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean,
but
yeah.
I have no idea what the final return is. But I mean, when you add up the dollars, it's going to be 18 plus million for Bledsoe, almost 5.5 million for Jackson Hayes. Kyra Lewis is almost at 4. Nikhil Alexander Walker is over 3. I mean, that adds up. You can take a lot of money back.
Oh boy, that'll be an interesting subplot this offseason. Who wants the hot potato of Eric Bledsoe?
Yeah, and whichever team does trade for that package will be like, hey, anyone else? Like, we just got right. Jackson Hayes, Kyra Lewis, Nikhil Alexander Walker, but we also got Eric Bledsoe. Anybody want him? Anyone? Yeah, yeah. Bueller? Anyone?
All right, well, that's a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you, as always, for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Take care.